Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. Real Talk is here every Tuesday at lunchtime to cover and answer the questions large and small. Today's question is, that's another big one. And the question is, how can men truly impact domestic violence prevention? We always find experts on a subject to answer these questions, and today our experts are Betsy Archambault, Executive Director of the Vashon Dove Project. Welcome, Betsy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And Chris Austin, the Board President for the Dove Project. This is your alter ego, Chris. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Well, glad to be here.
Full disclosure, we should mention that Chris is the host of our Mostly True radio show. And a very important part of Voice of Vashon operations overall. So I want to thank you both for being here, and I want to thank you most of all for the work that you do to prevent domestic violence on Vashon Island. You are doing something now called the 100 Man Campaign. What can you tell us about that?
So we are running the 100 Man Campaign, and we are asking 100 or more men to stand up against domestic violence by donating $100 or more to be part of this campaign.
What exactly will you do with that money?
Well, that money helps run our operations, which we have, kind of two different houses of what we do, prevention and then are the direct services to survivors of domestic violence.
How do you normally fund your operations? Is it through grants or other donations? How does that work?
So 25% of our funding comes from foundations. And then 50% of our funding comes from like Best Starts for Kids, the King County, Washington State, and then another 25% from individual donors.
So you've been working at the Dove Project and managing it for how long?
This is my fifth year.
Wow, very impressive. From my experience, you have transformed the organization into something that is incredibly effective here on Vashon Island. I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And thank you. It's really been the community that has grown Dove into the organization that it is today. When we started, we really didn't have anything. And the kind of the traditional way that other domestic violence agencies run over town wasn't really the model that was working here so well. And so all of our programs are asks and needs from the community. And that's how we get our program. And that's how Dove has become what it is, from people in the community saying, we need this. We really need legal clinic to be during the day and not at night. We really need this prevention program to be able to teach X, Y, and Z. And so it's, thank you for thanking me, but thank you and thank everybody on Vashon Island for really making Dove what it is.
Well, and I think you've had a lot to do with raising awareness that we actually need it here. What have you found is unique about preventing domestic violence on Vashon Island as opposed to perhaps a metropolitan area or some other organization?
Well, the biggest thing that that is kind of an out-of-the-box thinking challenge almost all the time is the way that we safety plan with folks. And what that means is how to keep yourself and your kiddos safe if there is a very real threat of violence. Because on Vashon, you can say, well, I need to go to the laundromat for X, Y, or Z. This is just an example. But mm-hmm. we only have one, mm-hmm. right? And over town, if there was some sort of problem with going to the laundromat, they would say, well, just like go to the one three blocks over, right?
Right.
And so you can actually shift your schedule and where you go, the places you go when you're over town. And here, sometimes there's really only one of the thing that you need to do. And so you have to keep that schedule for better or for worse.
How do you accommodate that?
We try to be as creative as possible and bring in as many kind of personal supports and resources as possible that people have. And largely, survivors have been safety planning on their own for years sometimes before they come to see us. And they are very adept at keeping themselves and their kiddos safe, even if they don't call it safety planning. It's just kind of, it becomes a normal part of life, right?
Wow.
And so we just try to help with some kind of like higher level logistics with that. If we can support them in some way that can change their schedule, or if it's a protection order that we can help facilitate them to apply for through one of the courts in Burien or King County somewhere. So
that's the privacy issue. That's the small town problem, if you will, that you have to cover, accommodate for here on Vashon Island that you might not have to do in a larger, more metropolitan area. What are the advantages of being in a small town and preventing domestic violence? Are there any?
So I'm going to go back to your last question. I also want to say that, I mean, one of the real challenges is that we are a small community.
Yeah.
And people do know each other. And people, I mean, including myself, you have a very idyllic view of the island. And I mean, this is where I came to raise my kids. And you, it's very kind of bubble living in a certain way. And you want to believe that that bubble is just perfect. And it's not. And that can be really, really hard to kind of take, because in a way, it almost kind of challenges like your personal identity of why you've made certain choices. And that can be really hard, right?
Yeah, you're challenging people's fundamental belief systems.
Yes.
And that is the hardest thing in the world to change.
Yes.
To let folks know that, yes, Vashon is special, and no, it's really a microcosm of the rest of the country in very many ways.
Yes, absolutely. But then the community is also a huge asset to us. I mean, in terms of fundraising and awareness raising and becoming allies and volunteers. And the more people know about the issues and about what we're doing, the more people are stepping up. And I mean, and that's also one of the reasons for the 100 Man campaign, is sometimes all you need to do is ask people to step up and they will. But they might not if they're not asked.
Right.
So, men, we're asking you to stand up.
Stand up. So, Chris, as a representative of all men, what can you tell us about how a man in his daily life might encourage respect for women?
Well, a whole gender I got to answer for. Okay.
Yep, there you go.
Well, I just think it goes back to respect to everyone. It's not just women. I mean, women have certainly gotten the short end of the stick globally as far as their rightful place to be equals with men. And but as far as how do we change this paradigm, I think it goes back to prevention. I mean, that's the old dentist in me talking. And I have to say, the genius of Betsy has been, over the years, she has built this tapestry of prevention programs. And they start in middle school, and they go through adulthood. And I brought an example. Of course, we can't talk about cases on the island, but this is a case in the newspaper, in Seattle Times. And it's about a man who was with his partner, a young woman, 21 years old, 22. And he murdered her, to be quite frank, in a domestic violence situation. Mm. And when you read the article, the family mentions, we were concerned about domestic violence that we saw in this relationship, or signs of it. And then when I read that, I think about, well, what if this woman, young woman in middle school, had access to the programs Betsy has developed?
And what would she have learned?
Warning signs. Like, this is not a good relationship. This is the, you know, this is what I need to walk away from this early.
What are the warning signs? Literally.
Jealousy is a big one. Obsessive calling and texting, wanting to know someone's whereabouts every single moment, getting the passwords to be able to check their Facebook or their email, or turning on their phone GPS tracker to be able to do that, isolating a person from his or her friends and family, making that person feel small, worthless, right? And then building themselves up, be like, well, but I'm the only one that's really going to love you through this. And that's certainly not indicative of all domestic violence experiences, but it certainly can be a component.
So if you've been hearing these lectures from middle school to high school, and then you're a young woman in college, then you've got some tools to deal with this. And then the other thing that mentioned in this article is the neighbor that heard this incident said he's heard shouting and threats for 20 minutes before he called 911. And we have a program that Betsy has integrated called the Green Dot Program. And its purpose is to teach all of us how to, what's the best way to say it? Integrate or step in and just break that cycle. Like maybe if this guy had just banged on the wall and said, hey, shut up. You know, that spiraling out of control would have been interrupted. And it may have not have wound out of control.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the right word, interrupting the violence as an active bystander.
Bystander. That's the word
I was
looking
for. What are
some
other things we can do besides knock on the wall? I mean, here, walls aren't that close.
No, exactly. And so the Green Dot model was actually developed on college campuses to combat sexual violence. And last year, they did a study at a university in Kentucky and it was a course over 5 years that the school became a completely Green Dot school, which meant that every single person on that campus, from the dean to every single student, librarians, food service workers, campus police, everybody was trained in Green Dot bystander intervention. And they found that when this was the case, when everyone was trained, that incidents of sexual violence decreased by 50%.
Wow.
So there's no other prevention program that has that type of evidence backing it, right? And so the main tenets of it are that you have the three Ds. You can direct, delegate, or distract. And so directly, you can speak to the person who you think might be being harmed, right? Or you can do it to the person who you might think is doing the harming, right? And the easiest thing, because this one seems like the scariest one.
Yeah, it does.
Is, hey, are you okay?
Huh.
And what that does is it lets both people know that someone sees what's going on.
And my understanding about those domestic violence situations is that they generally happen in isolation. So as soon as, let's say, the bully is outed in a situation like that, things do start to dissipate. Is that correct? Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, generally, but certainly not exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
As per the incident of bystander intervention on the train in Portland, where where men stood up and then were killed.
Mm.
But so the "Are you okay?" is so, so powerful, especially for survivors of domestic violence who might believe that everything, that the situation might be normal because it has been normalized, because for so many people, you don't just wake up one day and you're like, oh my gosh, this is domestic violence, because people don't identify that way, right? And that's fine. But it's like being a frog in boiling water, where it's just change a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you're like, how did I get here, right? And that really lets the survivor know that you see, I'm just going to say her, because the majority of survivors do identify as female. And that's really big. And so, are you okay? Is a really, really easy one. Let's everyone know that there's another set of eyes.
So the survivor then is aware that there's another way of behaving. This is not necessarily normal.
Right.
So they realize someone is watching them and they're seeing something not normal. Mm-hmm. And what really, I think, complicates domestic violence, and I'm going to go back to this little article, is the abuser in court said Carrie was very special and I loved her. So
that is chilling.
It is deeply chilling. It's unlike, let's say, racism or any kind of bigotry where it's just blind hatred, no reason behind it. This starts, or in this, at least in this case, these people were a young couple that loved each other and lived together. And just to Betsy's point, it got to be the water got warmer and warmer and warmer until this happened.
You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. Our subject today is how men can truly help to impact domestic violence prevention. Our guests are Betsy Archambault, Executive Director of the Dove Project here on Vashon, and Chris Austin, the Board President for the Dove Project. We can do this every Tuesday on Real Talk, thanks to Windermere Vashon Realty, who makes all our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. You folks were talking about the Green Dot program, which is training for all of us to help to intervene in domestic violence situations. You discussed direct action, which is asking the survivor, are you okay? And Chris, you emphasized that these situations often start in loving relationships and heat up to the point of domestic violence, which is just so hard to deal with. You said direct, delegate, and distract. So how do we, the average person walking around or observing a domestic violence situation, delegate? What's the delegate part?
So the easiest example of delegate to me is, well, I mean, certainly there are people that are paid to be security or doorman or things like that. And in this bystander intervention is not meant to be like, you have to be the hero, right? So for me, I'm a woman, and sometimes you go out and about and you see something that you think, maybe I should say something. But being female and not having the strength, you know, or the height or, I mean, the build to be able to feel like you can do something safely, sometimes the easiest thing to do is to say to, you know, a guy that you're with, your husband, your boyfriend, a friend, who is a man. People like, can you just go over there and see if everything's okay? Because sometimes the messenger really does matter, right? And you don't want to put yourself in a position that you are feeling unsafe, right? And so that's a pretty easy one.
Would it make sense to look for a nearby police officer or doorman or...
If that's what's readily available to you. But frequently, a lot of these situations you see and you act on within like a minute or so.
So you don't have time to look around.
Yeah. And sometimes it might not be the best choice. I mean, also kind of looking at your demographic and seeing, I mean, potentially how other people would see this. I mean, what other populations might be scared of the police? There are quite a lot of them that might not want that extra attention because that might add another layer of horribleness.
So it could accelerate the situation.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good point.
And then distract. You can run into somebody. I mean, just like accidentally on purpose, run into someone.
Oh.
Spill your drink. Run up to someone and say, oh my gosh, I've got to go catch the ferry. What time is it going to be? Or just be the oblivious person. Oh my gosh, didn't I know you from high school? I just love this part, don't you? And you can do all sorts of things. I mean, and on Vashon, yeah, I mean, we're not usually hearing what's going on with our neighbors. But, I mean, this was one that you can really, really be creative. If you think there's something crazy going on inside someone's house, you can let your goats out. It's like it's obviously like a big goat catching. No, I mean, really, because then it completely interrupts what is going on, because all of a sudden you've got to go catch goats.
Uh-huh.
Right? And while that might be stressful, that's going to interrupt whatever was happening right there. And this does not mean that it's not going to start again later. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea behind the green dot is, like, imagine Washington State and all of the bad things that happen, all of the crime, all of the domestic violence, all of the sexual violence are just populating the map in these all of these red dots. Like, you've seen that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now imagine every single time someone took a moment to care about somebody else in the, are you okay? I see what you're going through. You know, I think that wasn't right what he just said to you. Imagine all of those green dots then populating. And so it's a ripple effect that you might not know exactly the impact that you're having. But if everyone starts doing it enough, there certainly will be an impact.
And what a beautiful image. Chris, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, as far as the prevention programs, this isn't the only one. I mean, Betsy has done a hell of a job of covering all the bases, so to speak. For instance, we have the SAFE program, which is Sexual Assault Free Environment, and that trains wait staff to identify someone getting, you know, the popular terms roofied. We have the RAD, the Rape Aggression Defense, which is a program that teaches how to use your body to extract yourself from a situation, you know, a groin punch, something, and then run away. You know, you're not going to beat somebody up. It's self-defense.
Yes.
But also it's like how to be aware of your surroundings and how to, you know, not put yourself in that position. We have teen counsel, and that is the first program outside of Planned Parenthood in the country. Our kids, our young adults doing this program on the island because of Betsy. And so we're very proud of her. And for instance, when she talks about the middle schoolers, how to be digitally safe. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of that. You know, digitally stalking. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of that. That is a real present problem that needs to be addressed. But somebody thinking out of the box. So.
And thinking at the level of those kids and their experiences, having enough empathy and understanding to do that. And would you tell us a little more about the teen council?
Sure. Well, one thing I got to say, because we just got 7 minutes, all of these programs are free. And they got to be paid for.
Yes.
And this is such an asset to the community. We have taught, 1,000 people, 900 students, and 200 or so last year have benefited. That's a tenth of the population of this
have
island.
Have gone through one or all of these programs.
Mm-hmm.
So but that takes money. We have advocates that are salaried. We have a rent to pay, which is not cheap. So this is why we're having this program, and I'm trying to get on every radio show I can to say, this is important. This is going to pay off today, and it's going to pay off 10 years from now. When that kid that heard Dove Speaks and digital stalking and all that kind of stuff, 10 years from now says, you know, this guy's kind of creepy. I'm going to walk away from this relationship.
Wouldn't you love to work yourself out of a job, Betsy?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. I would like to work myself out of a job. Yeah, actually, one quarter of teens will be digitally stalked.
Wow.
Wow.
That's crazy. That's technology facilitating this you know,
right.
Awful behavior.
Bad behavior. I was just reading about it this morning.
In fact, there was an article, a story on NPR this morning about that. I think it was on Here and Now. It's obviously a pervasive problem, and Vashon Island is not exempt. I did want to hear, now you've listed all these wonderful programs, Green Dot, prevention classes for teens, the SAFE program, the self-defense and awareness program, teen council. Could you tell us a little bit more about teen council? What exactly does that do?
So teen council is peer-to-peer education, and it is a peer-led sex ed. And so our teens go through about 130, 140 hours of sex education per year themselves to be able to be effective and medically accurate sex educators within the community. And so what this looks like is at the community, they're peers. And so when someone's talking, instead of just guessing about information, right, like we probably did when we were younger because mm-hmm. we didn't have Google, you know, or Google information, which really is questionable sometimes
so
with what kind of information you're going to get.
I would be hesitant to rely
yes,
on that.
I would yes. be hesitant to rely on that. Then they can actually get accurate information and accurate resources, right? And then in the middle school, it's the near peer education that is super effective. And 100% of McMurray students will be taught by the Teen Council during the school year. And so they went in and we were asked if the Teen Council could teach sex ed. And so I think it's like 64 classes within this year, the school year, that they will teach. And so it ranges from like healthy relationships and consent, refusal skills, to, I mean, very much based on biology and looking at the human body, all sorts of different things that these teens are trained in. They're a pretty phenomenal group.
It sounds like it. I would be wondering, I guess, how you get teenagers to stop giggling when they talk about these things and to manage what I'm sure are going to be some strange questions.
So they're taught. I mean, we have presentation skills and public speaking skills and how to talk about things that that could be value-based, but how to talk it in a very neutral, medically accurate, and how to answer the questions that were very clearly meant to provoke. And you still answer them. You're like, well, that's a very interesting question. And I'm going to tell you right now that, you know, medically that cannot happen. Right. You know, or that's not a thing. I mean, whatever it is, mm-hmm. they treat mm-hmm. every single question as a valid question and then just keep going.
And I've heard them lecture and they're very poised. Their parents should be very proud of them.
How many teens do you have running this program?
Six.
That's very, what happens now? They have to obviously have some sort of legacy program in order to pass this on to others. So presumably you're continuing to train new teens.
Yes. So we are actually recruiting new teens right now for next year's Teen Council. So if you have anybody that's interested, a lot of these teens go on to work in public health and World Health and Planned Parenthood organizations. I mean, there's a lot of people that are really passionate about reproductive advocacy and equity, I mean, even as teenagers.
Wow. Doesn't that give you hope for the future?
It does.
We are about out of time. This is Real Talk. We've been talking about preventing domestic violence with Betsy Archambault, Executive Director of the Dove Project here on Vashon, and Chris Austin, Board President for the Dove Project. What final words do you have for our listeners?
Where can they donate, Betsy?
You can go on our website, www.vashondoveproject.org, and the homepage has a big button that says donate. And you can go right there. Click that button.
The campaign ends April 26th at the guest bartender night at the hardware store. The Filson sisters are going to be there.
Ooh-hoo.
They got their plane all fueled up. They're going to fly in. And come join us.
Thank you both for being here. Thank you all for listening. This has been Real Talk. We're here with you every Tuesday to answer questions, large and small. I want to thank our producers, Kaya Boding, Bill West, and Gail Kellner, as well as the composer of our theme music, which isn't playing, Luke McQuillan.
Luke.
We're here every Tuesday. Thanks for listening.